Hey, everybody, I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Katie.
Speaker tonight happens to be my husband. I met him in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. He is, I would say that I'm the person that, you know, shares all the time and likes to tell my story and be the center of attention, and he's just the opposite, which is, you know, typically how relationships go. I mean, he gets nervous. He's not a big, you know, but he doesn't, you know, doesn't like all the attention, so he's a little bit nervous, but he's my angel, and I met him in here, and he's changed my life, and we do a lot together. I mean, you know, we live together, we sort of work together, we go to AA together, and, you know, we go through, you know, we have our fights, and we have our stuff, but he's got a lot of integrity, and he's a sweetheart, and he's my one and only, so give it up for Trey.
I'm Trey Hillman. I'm an alcoholic. And, I don't tell my story a lot, man. There's other parts of service I like to do better, like help other guys and show up early with the Krispy Kreme donuts for the workshop tomorrow and stuff like that. But here I am. And, you know, I was always told never to tell someone no in Alcoholics Anonymous by my sponsor. And I don't do it. You know, I always say yes and then figure out a way. I actually double booked myself tonight and then figured out that I had this instead of cowboy mouth on this evening. But, you know, I'm glad to be here. You know, I was thinking about it while we went to Mad Italian, me and my good friend. And I have a lot of good friends nowadays, and I met them all in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a lot of good friends today, and I was thinking about it while I was eating tonight. You know, there's probably not a lot that you're going to hear tonight that you haven't heard before, you know, except for, you know, parts of my story and what happened. But, you know, I was thinking, you know, before AA, I couldn't hold a job. You'll hear that. I couldn't keep a wife. You'll hear that. Hell, I couldn't live life. And you'll hear that. It was pretty bleak when I walked in the doors. And you know, I had actually, it's kind of a story of what it was like, what happened, then what happened again, and what it's like now, because I actually had 5 years and decided to drink again because I wasn't doing the things that were suggested that I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I'm glad I lived and learned from that because not all of us make it back. That's another thing I'll share with y'all. You know, my little sister didn't make it. You know, she was shot in Mississippi over a drug deal, and, you know, gone wrong, and you know, that's just part of this disease. You know, if you're not ready, then, you know, the chances are we're probably not going to make it if we're continuing to do what we do, because a lot of times it's a slow death, and sometimes you just don't know when you're going to die, and that's what happened with her. But I was, don't mind if I take this thing off now. I've done this part of it. It's warm. Thanks, brother. I was born in a little town called Denham Springs, Louisiana. I was actually born in Lady of the Lake Hospital, about a mile and a half from Tiger Stadium in Louisiana. And, you know, I grew up in a suburb of Baton Rouge, and it was mostly country. You know, I did a lot of hunting and fishing and you know, that's just kind of how I grew up. You know, it was small town life, and I enjoyed it. You know, I didn't know any I sure didn't know Atlanta life until I moved here. But you know, I had a good life. You know, my my elementary school was right across the street in the neighborhood. And that's just how, you know, small town it was. You know, everybody knew everybody in that neighborhood. And that's how I grew up, and it was a great time. It was a great time to be alive in the early 70s, mid 70s, you know. I don't remember all the gas crisis and all that stuff, you know, really. I don't until I, you know, looked back and saw all that. But, you know, it didn't affect me or my sister or my family much. You know, just know that when as I was growing up, I knew my dad, he had a problem with drinking, because him and my mother would kind of get in these arguments every once in a while, and you know, I didn't really think of that as being alcoholism. I just thought it was just being a spat or something, because what I saw or what I correlated alcoholism with was good times, because in the backyard of my home, you know, every other or every third weekend, or we would go other places where there were crawfish bowls and fish fries and stuff like that. And you know, what I saw was like the book calls conviviality and you know, release and a good time, you know. And, you know, I just remember the picnic tables from, you know, as long as this room, with newspaper on them and pots being boiled with crawfish and beer, you know, Miller everywhere, you know, Miller Lite everywhere, and everybody having a good time. That's how I envisioned drinking. I didn't have my first drink till I was probably, I don't know, six. But I... you know, I didn't get drunk, but I remember, you know, my uncles actually, and my dad were playing poker, you know, and I'd go get a beer out of the ice chest for them. You know, I loved doing it because I'd pop the top before I brought it there, and I'd take a sip. And, you know, I thought I was getting one over, you know. Didn't really get drunk, you know, but I thought I was, you know, getting one over and maybe, you know, kind of feeling a little grown up because I'm, you know, I'm drinking a little beer, you know, tasted like crap, but I did it anyway. And, you know, I think the first time I ever got drunk was when I was around 13 years old. And I remember the guy I got drunk with and actually I smoked a little reefer with. His name was Greg Gott. I remember him inviting me down. This is after my mother and my father actually divorced, and we had moved up to Shreveport, and so my dad had visitations and he'd come back and forth to get us. But I remember the guy's name, man, Greg Gott, and I remember him bringing me down. I can picture it like it was yesterday. I remember walking in through the mud room into the kitchen, and through to his parents' room, and they weren't there. And he brought me to the closet, and there was a big old trash bag. And he reached in that trash bag, and he pulled out this big bud of marijuana. And I'm like, "What's that?" And he's like, "You've never gotten high?" And I'm like, "No, never done that." Well, I didn't get high that day either, because I did not know how to smoke pot. But I did drink with him, and I remember that. Now, it took me a couple more times, but I did get high, and I liked that too, you know. But alcohol was always there. I just want to mention that alcohol always worked until it didn't work. You know, I could always put the other aside, but you know, I just remember that first time, that first drink, man. Going, man, that's good. I want to do that. I want to do that a lot. And I hung out with Greg Gott a lot through my middle school years and my high school years. We kind of parted ways around early high school, but I continued to drink, and I'm sure he did too. And you know, he introduced me a couple other things too, but that's neither here nor there. But that's how I wanted to live, man. I didn't do very good in high school early on, because I'll tell you, man, I was more worried about partying than anything else, and that's what I like doing. And I met a little girl when I was in 10th grade, and she was a cheerleader. And you know, it's what people do in Louisiana, man. You drink and you have sex, and that's what we did. You know, you're out in the woods and it's cold and it's time to get in bed. You know, and that's what we did. And I ended up getting this lady pregnant. You know, I had a beautiful daughter, but I'm going to tell you right now, I could not get it together enough to be a father to her for the longest time. And, you know, that's heartbreaking. Today I do have a relationship with my daughter and my granddaughter, now, and it's a beautiful thing. And AA gave that to me, and a power, that I found through the steps. I was a mess. I was a mess then. You know, I was there, during her pregnancy, and, actually cut the cord and was in the room, but I can tell you I was loaded there, and I continued to stay loaded until she finally had enough and kicked me out. And you know, my dad was always kind of the rescuer. He said, you're gonna come back down to Baton Rouge and we're gonna get back in school. And you know, I kind of had no options at that point. You know, I'd run out of options, and like we all do when we find ourselves in our cups. I did, so I took the offering and ended up going to welding school. He wanted me to work with him. He's a machinist, and he works. I might go a little. My wife loves to tell my story for me. She told it to me all the way over here from the Mattachine. So it's not quite going like she wants it to go, I'm pretty sure, because we're about to go down a rabbit hole. And when she started laughing, I knew this is where we're going, all right? You asked for it, Jerry. Just follow me, okay? We'll get back out. Anyway, my dad was a machinist, and he worked at a chemical plant right off the Mississippi River in Baton Rouge. And this man basically wanted to keep me under his thumb. He wanted to take care of me. You know, he loved me. And he wanted me to go to welding school, and he wanted me to work with him at that plant. That's what he wanted. But I didn't want that. I did go through welding school, and once I did, I moved back to Shreveport to try to win back Lori's love or affection or whatever. And she was already seeing somebody else. And actually, they ended up getting married and having three other kids. So that dissolved like that. And I didn't see my daughter for I didn't see my daughter for 12 years. And that's heartbreaking. But that's just what happened. You know, it's what happens to us. I ended up kind of roaming around Shreveport for a long time. I was taking care of horses, actually thoroughbreds on a farm, and helping breed them, race horses, and bringing them to the track, Louisiana Downs, and that's what I did. I was basically just working on a farm, I drank myself into a stupor and out of money and out of a place to live and ended up calling my mother here, and she had moved to Atlanta. I swear she moves. Every time I move to a state, she's back. She is out, Jack. It seemed like that. I'm sure that's not what she was doing. But I called her, and she said, just come to Atlanta let's see if we can get you straight. And in 89, I moved to Atlanta. And, man, you put a country boy in the middle of a city like this, and it's on. And this is kind of where I found, you know, other substances. And, man, it was on. I mean, those test questions are great in the book, but I've got a few other test questions too, man, that I could add to it. If a bad case of the jitters won't get it, then throw a little cocaine in there with your drinking, and how about a little paranoia and the jitters at the same time? And I was a mess. I went to jail the first month I lived here, DeKalb County Jail. I went 2 weekends in a row. My mother and my aunt went to Germany, and I found myself throwing a party at their home. And unbelievable. First time I throw a party, and DeKalb County shows up, and they throw me in jail. And I guess we're just hard headed, or at least I was hard headed. I told them, you can't throw me in jail. This is private property, and this, that, and the other. I know my rights, and I'm gonna throw a party again next weekend. Well, I threw a party again next weekend, and the same cop came to the door, threw me in jail again. And this is when you're 18 years old, man. I tell you, it's I just thought I was invincible, man, and drink only made that worse. But it's still working early on, man. I mean, I could drown out the hamster wheel for a while there, and I had good times too. I'm not gonna lie to you, and I guess that's what kept me out of the rooms for so long, because I thought, man, maybe I can do this another way. I call my 20s. My blackout years, man, because they are spotty at best, and especially my early 20s, I was drinking a lot, and I was eating a lot of acid, and I was hanging out at the Chattahoochee, and I remember that rope swing, and doing triple gainer and coming out with my ear bleeding with a beer in my hand, and I just remember these kind of things that were happening to me on a regular basis, man. I was just beating my body up. And I just keep on going. I had lost my license in around my mid 20s because I continued to drive without insurance, and they frowned upon that. And I thought to myself, I really don't need a license. Don't need a license to drink. I'm old enough to buy liquor. And I actually moved in with a friend right off of Peachtree Industrial, across from, I think it's called World Beverage, near the QT at Tilly Mill and Peachtree Industrial. And I worked at that liquor store for about a month till they caught me in the back drinking. I'm stocking the cooler, but I'm stocking Trey too at the same time. And they had enough. They, I'm pretty sure that they saw all the the empty beer bottles that were either we'd have to put them to be counted up to give back to the vendor or whatever. And I'm sure it wasn't adding up. I continued to drink like that, man. I had no power over the amount, or when I started, I couldn't stop, and I knew that probably about my mid 20s. But man, I just kept on going. I met a young lady. I guess I was about 26 years old, and she would become my first wife. I kind of got my stuff together a little bit for her. She helped me get my license back. I loved her at the time, I thought, and I did what I could to try to keep her. I didn't put in the fact that I've been to about 4 treatments and by this time. But my last ditch effort, I'm thinking to myself, discipline. Discipline's what I need. I'm going to join the Air Force. At 29 years old, I decide to join the Air Force.
Now,
my girlfriend at the time is going to UCF down in Florida, and I had moved down actually just outside of Orlando, actually north of Orlando, about an hour away in Lady Lake, where my mother was living, and that's where I began to start running and getting ready for boot camp. And I'm gonna marry this girl, man. I'm gonna get my act together. You know, it's what I need. I just need a little discipline in my life. I tried everything else, and man, what a bad idea. It turned out really, really sad. Actually, we ended up getting married, but I'm gonna tell you, boot camp was hell. And it about killed me, I swear. I've never been yelled at so much in my life. But I learned to load planes in there, and actually went in. I don't know what I scored on the test going in, but they wanted me to go in to explosive ordnance disposal. And when I found out how much they were going to pay me, I was like, no. I don't think so. You know, this is not enough to have my hand blown off or anything. I just wanted to be around planes and get a little discipline in my life. So they said, well, we've got another route you can take. How about loading planes for a living? I'm like, shoot, yeah, let's do it. Let's load planes. You know, I'll be around the planes. And I learned to weigh Humvees and howitzers and pallets of whatever needed to go wherever, and how to load a plane, you know, to keep it from falling out of the sky. I never did it once as a civilian, but I learned to do that, and I went on a tour of duty, and I got married in right after boot camp, and I went on a tour of duty about 3 years later of being in there, and I'd started drinking before I got on that plane to go to Charleston, South Carolina, and it didn't stop. I couldn't stop myself. You know, I was able to keep it to myself long enough to get to Charleston and get to the hotel that we were staying at, because we were there doing maneuvers with the Army, and we were showing them how to load planes, and they were showing us how to do field maneuvers. And but I was not there. After the first day, I took the Air Force van that they were loaning us to go back and forth from the hotel, and I took the government credit card that they gave us to eat and get the hotel on, and proceeded to rack up over $4,000 in charges on that credit card. And you know, I was off to the races. I had you know, been seeking out sordid spots, like the traps. And it's funny, man, you drive through a neighborhood like that in an Air Force van and in your BDUs, and they scatter. But if you persist, just continue to go through there back and forth, they'll start coming out little by little, little by slowly. They're not going to let you park the van. But they'll get you what you need, and I had found the local bootlegger as well, I was off to the races. I was AWOL for 5 days, and I'd actually smartened up, brought the van back, and went to the local airport and got a car on that same card, rented a car. Needless to say, the car was stolen, and. It was a mess. I was in a bad way, the only thing that kept me from going to prison or Leavenworth was that I turned myself in, and they didn't know what to do with me. They saw my hotel room, and it was a pigsty. You know, they didn't. You know, I turned myself in to the office at that hotel room and called my superiors, and they picked me up and said, "Where the hell you been?" You know, and I looked like death warmed over. I looked horrible, I'm sure. And you know, I told them I had a drinking problem, and of course they had been in the hotel room. They said, "You got more than a drinking problem," and I did. I mean, I had all kinds of problems at that point. But they brought me back to my base, and of course they took drug tests and they questioned me and they did all this, that, and the other, and then they let me go. told me that I would have a hearing within a month or two, and that happened in Macon, and I was in front of the JAG, sure enough, two months after that, after I got back. But that is when I found AA and actually did the deal for the first time. I met a man named David C. at 8111. Him and Bill S. were doing a big book study on, I want to say it was Tuesday nights. And I walked in there with my wife, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And I really didn't know what that meant. I heard it, but, you know, I'd never worked the steps. And he worked the steps with me. And, you know, that first year was a little bouncy. For me, I bounced in and out for that first year, and I remember David saying to me clearly, he said, "Trey, you're going to lose your wife if you continue to do what you do." And right out of a year and a half, I lost my wife. I went into Mar, and she filed for divorce, and that was it. I had a great job, actually. I was building homes at the time as well, and I lost that job. You know, I started to do what that man asked me to do. I met with him at the river once a week, and we were going through the steps, and my life was getting better. Even though that sucked, you know, that I'd lost my wife, you know, I was able to get through that, and I was doing the deal. You know, needless to say, I was getting better, and it was through working the steps. In that time, I guess 3 years into it, I was on fire for AA. Mount Vernon was my home group. Actually, in 2002, when all this went down, it was actually right up here, and they were just moving over to North Atlanta Church of Christ, and I moved with them, man. I mean, that was my home group. You know, those were my people at the time, and I was doing the deal. I mean, I loved AA and all it was doing for me. Dave helped me, you know, to an understanding of a power that helped me out of the pit I was in, and I was in a mess. He actually went to that hearing with me in Macon, and you know, he sat in there and testified for me. You know, people don't just do that. I mean, but he saw what I was doing, and he believed that I was doing the right thing, and he stuck his neck out there for me. I was doing the deal, man. Life was good, about 3 years in, you know, that was when my sister lost her life, and you know, I kind of choked up on that one, because, you know, if y'all knew my mother, my mother's a great woman. She she's a church-going lady. She ministers to women, though, in the jails, and brings them to a house where she lives and helps them get sober through another. It's 12-step, but it's just a different way they do it. And, you know, she's helping these women. And I was angry. I was like, you know, how could a God of my understanding take my sister when my mother's helping all these women? How could you hurt her like that? And I was angry. I was super angry. And, you know, I kind of dove into my work. That company that had fired me took me back. You know, these are the things that happen. Only AA, man, can make this crap happen. Because, I mean, the crap that I put, you know, my employers, my mother, my wife, all of those things that I put them through, man, there's no reason for them to stick around. I mean, it's always a mess, and it's a real mess for them. But I had my sister cremated, and we buried her actually in Flatwoods, Louisiana, where my father lives, at the top of Hillman Road, where my grandparents lived, and where I remember my grandpa asking us as he was swinging out underneath that cedar tree, he's like, would you rather go to heaven or would you rather go to Flatwoods? And as we were growing up, we always said we'd rather go to Flatwoods. Mm-hmm. And that's where I sprinkled her ashes. And, you know, I took care of my mother during that time because she was heartbroken and understandably. And you know, I talked to David about this, and he gave me suggestions. He told me what I should do, but I kind of pocketed that and dove into my work. Bad idea. You know, I was just kind of taking back my will and thinking that that I could do this thing. And about 20 days before picking up a 5-year chip, it's going fast. Or going slow. So 5 years into my sobriety, 20 days from picking up a 5-year chip, it was, I remember it was the 26th of December in 2008. I was miserable. You know, I was doing things that nobody that's sober should be doing. You know, I was dating a woman and seeing 5 others, you know, and it was I was sick, and it was a bad time for me. And I remember sitting in that Shell station thinking, man, I'm miserable, and I'm about to go in here and buy a 6-pack of beer and start this thing up again. And, you know, I thought maybe I should call Dave, you know, because I'd learned to do that, you know. But you know, I knew at that point, even if I called Dave at that point, I don't think I would have stayed there long enough for him to get there. I don't think anybody could have gotten there quick enough. And I walked into that Shell station on Peachtree Industrial up there near Brookhaven and bought a 6-pack, and it was off to the races again. And for another good year, I bounced in and out. And I'm an ugly drunk, man. I'm going to tell you, I go on benders for 5 days. You know, I'm a wet your pants, drive around, decide. You know, I'm looking at license plates. That's CIA. That's FBI. I'm going to turn off here. There's a helicopter. That's great. I'm going to turn here. You know, I'm shot out when I'm drinking, man. I am bad. I'm bad to drink. And you know, you throw a little cocaine on top of it, man, I am out. I mean, I am just a mess, and that's how I do it. I remember one night being, I'm going to carry y'all down a rabbit hole here, being off of Holcomb Bridge Road, and I'd been up for like, I think, 3 or 4 days, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I walked in there with 50 cents to get gas for my pickup truck. I went back out there, and I pumped 50 cents worth of diesel into my truck. The funny thing is, the nozzles on those things are a lot bigger than your, but I held it right up there, not thinking twice about it, and I pumped that 50 cents in, and I got about a mile and a half down the road, and it stalled out. I remember I was at Jay Bird Alley over there by where Peachtree Corners is. And I remember just sitting at that stop sign, just trying to turn it over, man, in this gray smoke flying over the front of the car, coming around the side of the truck and over the front, and I was like, oh geez, this is not good. It was ugly, man. I mean, this is how I did it. And after a year of that, man, I had had enough. And now I went back to Mar and asked them what I needed to do. And I remember Doug Brush saying, you know, Trey, there's not much more that we can help you with. You know what to do. And I went to a halfway house, and I was only there for a month. You know, I got right back into the steps. I asked Robert, I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying his name, Robert Bell, to be my sponsor. And I'd known him through all those years, actually, going to Mount Vernon. I'd go over to his house after the Thursday night meeting and after the Wednesday night meeting at 8111, the men's meeting. And we would go, like, kind of like we do it now, but go through the 12 and 12 and go through the big book. And it was about 6 or 7 of us guys. And you know, I remember coming back in and saying, you know, Robert, I need help, and I know I'd like you to sponsor me if you would. And he said, you know, Trey, I'd be happy to. And he said, and this is what I say to the guys that I sponsor now. He said, are you willing to do what it takes to gain victory over alcoholism? And, man, I tell you, I swallowed, and I'm like, man, yeah, victory over anything right now would be great. And he brought me through the 12 steps as it's outlined in the book, and I had an experience with it, and you know, I found in doing my fourth step, I have to be perfectly honest with another man at all times with whatever's going on with my life, because that's what I do. I'll shut down and keep it on the inside, and eventually, just like, you know, we come in here and get our fourth and fifth step done, taking that trash out, I'll pack it right back in. I have to be perfectly honest with another man. I just have to be. We got through the steps. He asked me to come to this group, and I think they had started about 6 months earlier, and it was the fifth tradition right around the corner. From where my wife lives now, and you know, I started coming to that group, and it grew. It wasn't any bigger than this, and actually, we were in a circle downstairs, and it was very small. You know, they were big on service work, and I enjoyed being in the middle of that, you know, and participating in that. You know, I felt a part of it at last, and that group just blew up. You can't imagine seeing something like that, but man, it's just like it says in the book, man, if friends will grow up around you, and that's what's happened. I don't know half the people in our damn group now, because there's a lot of people that go there. I mean, it's there, we have, you know, I get to see the people that are home group members now, because I'm the chip chair this year, and I get to see and look at a name and say, okay, I know that person, and I get to order their chip now. But you know, the first 6 months, I had worked the steps with Robert, and I'd driven my motorcycle up one night, and Katie had a flat tire, and I'd actually was meeting a friend there that he's still out there drinking, but he came up there with me that night, and the meeting had ended, and I remember Katie, she's in distress, you know, her tire's flat, and there's six guys around her tire trying to get this thing off, and I was like, I can take care of that. Got down there and I took that tire off, and I put that spare on. And you know, I remember I saw Katie. You know, I saw, she's a good looking woman. I'm like, hey, how you doing? You know, she's like, would you like me to buy you a slice of pizza? Yeah, just for changing the tire. I was like, yeah, yes, I would. And if you know Katie, she's like, well, I'm going to buy you a piece of pizza, but I'm not going to buy your friend a piece of pizza. So that night, I guess that would be considered our first date. You know, I was smitten over her. You know, but I'm going to tell you, I had a pretty checkered past. It kind of came out once I started dating her. You know, the Facebook posts and all this crap started coming, and Katie started receiving this stuff, and she talked to her sponsor. And I remember her telling me what her sponsor said. Your past wasn't checkered, was it? So, but we got those things out in the open and on the table. In the beginning, and we stayed close to our sponsor, you know, John and Kathy came over to the house, and you know, went through the 12 traditions with us, and how to you know, live the traditions in the home. And, you know, it was it's marvelous. I thought, man, I didn't think I'd ever get married again. That's the last thing on my mind. You know, I was just happy to be sober again. But I'll tell you, God has plans for us if we do the deal that you couldn't even dream of. You couldn't even dream of. I could never have dreamt the life I have today from where I'd come from. It was a mess. It was a mess. I'd stirred up a big pile of crap. And I came in here. I did what was asked of me. And my life's great today. I have, you know, I can say I've got best, you know, I used to say, man, I've got my best friend. I've got best friends in this program. I've got a lot of them. You know, I got a couple of guys, James M. and Toby G. We go golfing every Sunday when I'm in town, no fail. You know, and we talk about things. Man, I love those guys, you know. Daryl and Pierce, we're always traveling together. You know, a guy, you know, we've been to Jazz Fest a couple of times. We've been to Puerto Rico. Me and my wife are going to Puerto Rico. She's never been, so I know the ropes, so I can bring her and have a great time. My life is full today. I could sit here and go on and on about how great my life is today. And it's, you know, it's all external crap. I mean, but my insides, man, I can sleep tonight, and I don't have to think about who I've hurt today. I don't have to look over my shoulder and you know, think about the IRS coming after me. Those bills are paid. You know, my wife pulled those out from under my truck seat about a year after we were
about 2 months.
Okay, about 2 months after. So I had a small resentment with the IRS, and it was, you know, I had 7 years worth of back taxes, but I had them nice and neat underneath the seat every year, and I brought them in, and I talked to Robert about it, and I did them. I did them myself. I took 2 weeks out of my life, I swear, and I sat there, and I did all the paperwork, and I sent them to 3 different states. Because that's how many years I'd gone through. You have to send them to different places because they're at different places. You know, I found that, you know, if you owe them, you owe them for 7 years. If they owe you, they only owe you for 3 years back. And that's just how they work it out. And, you know, I thought after I was finished with it, I'm like, shit, they owe me a little money. But when they came back and told me their terms or how they do it, I owed them some money, and I paid it off, and I paid it off within a year. And, you know, it's just, and my life is just great today. I can't explain the people that I come in contact with, my sponsees. I was talking to one today, man, and it's amazing the crap that'll come out of your mouth when you're working a program, and you're like, you hang up the phone and you're like, man, that's pretty good. I should probably do a little bit more of that in my own life. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's nothing that I conjured up. It's everything that I've learned. I learned how to live in AA. This is where I learned it. I learned it through working the 12 steps. I learned how to live those principles in my life, and my life today is much better than I ever thought it would be. And I know I've got a lot of time here, but that's all I've got. And I love AA. That's all I got to say. Thank you.